Basketball Manitoba podcast, we have Bob Town. He is a graduate of Churchill High School, where he then went on to play at the University of Manitoba, where he was an All-Canadian and captain of the team in 1972. His excellence on the court led to his selection for the national team in 1972. Over the following 5 years, he represented Canada on the international stage, participating in prestigious events like the Pan Am Games in Mexico City, the World University Games in Moscow, and in 1976, he represented Canada at the Montreal Olympics. He also played for the St. Andrews Super Saints, where he achieved 2 national championships and was recognized as Tournament All-Star 4 times. In 1996, he was inducted into the Basketball Manitoba Hall of Fame, in 2009, the Manitoba High School Sports Hall of Fame, and in 2007, his 1976 Olympic team was inducted into the Canada Basketball Hall of Fame. Bob, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Darcy.
So I have to start off by sharing a story with you, just with regards to one of our recent guests. And so the episode, I mean, I guess it will have aired already, but Dean Pavone, you came up on his podcast, oddly enough. And so, you know, when I'm going to ask, you know, I asked him the standard questions about, you know, how we got into the game and everything. And he mentioned you as one of the pivotal people. Oddly enough, it wasn't because, you know, you mentored him or anything like that. It was simply because you told him to make a different decision. And so I just kind of opened that up to then also say that, you know, I played with your son, Sean, at Glenlawn. I know Andrew very well, obviously played later with, you know, in senior men. He's a little younger. But the basketball community is in Manitoba is a very tight niche one. And if you know someone, you know kind of everybody. And so I've known about you and remember when I was a high school kid, you even coming out and playing against us and everything like that. So you've been in the community for a long time. So it's an honor to have you on the podcast. So thank you for taking the time. I'm very, very excited to hear more about your story because I don't really know about your story. I know who you are. I know your sons. I know, obviously, the bio I read, but it's going to be cool to dig in and hear some more about exactly how you journeyed through everything and your perspective. So appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Darcy.
So I got to ask the story, but before we go into your story, the story with Dean. So I'm actually not going to say anything. You tell me your perspective of how exactly you ran into him and explain that story to us.
Well, first of all, Dean Favoni is a really good guy. And last night, unfortunately, his team lost in the semifinals in provincials, yes. Which I was really sorry to see. He's a guy that deserves a chance, deserves to win a provincial champion as a coach and as a person.
Yeah.
What happened was, my recollection is that Dean had applied for a position. I was principal at Nelson McIntyre Collegiate, and we had a math position there. And he actually had played for Ted Stowes, who was my best friend. And we played together on the national team and with at the University of Manitoba and with St. Andrews Super Saints. And so Ted had coached Dean, and Dean had come and applied for the job. And subsequently, Nelson Mac was the only high school in what was then Norwood School Division. Now it became part of St. Boniface and then now Louis Riel School Division. So there was lots of opportunities now for teachers to move. But back then, there were only 7 schools in Norwood School Division. So for Dean to accept a job at Nelson Mac, it was a very small school. There wasn't a lot of room for movement or anything. And he said he had an opportunity at Dakota, and my recommendation was, you know, yeah, we'd love to have you. You'd be a great addition to our teaching staff and our coaching staff here at Nelson Mac, but for your own personal future, I recommended that he'd be better off to choose Dakota, and he did, and he's gone on to have a great career there. Yes. As a coach and as, yes, a teacher.
Yes Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that I wanted to hear your perspective of it because you started off by saying Dean's a very nice guy, which everybody says that about Dean. It's true. He's a very nice guy. But I think that it just shows the perspective, like how important it is when it probably says a lot about you, right? I mean, realistically, you saw somebody who you could have said, hey, come here. I'm the principal here. I want the, I want you to do this. But you saw something in him that, hey, look, from a basketball perspective and this type of thing, if he goes over there, it's gonna be a better fit for him, right? And so I think I thought it would just be an interesting way to kind of open up the podcast, and because he was telling the story and he was so grateful for you for being that type of person that would actually say, hey, what's best for him as a person, right? And he's gone on to, I think they lost last night, but he won one in, I don't know, we talked about it, 2004, I think, when they upset Daniel Mack. So
That's right.
he's had a great career. But nonetheless, we're not here to talk about Dean. I want to hear more about your story. So I always typically ask this question just openly. What's your first memory of basketball? How'd you get involved in the game? Who showed you? Where were you?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I guess I have a little bit of a story to tell with that.
Let's hear
My father played basketball, and he played at Central YMCA, and he played in what was then the Intermediate League, and he played noon hour basketball and everything. But I was probably, I'm guessing, 5 or 6, maybe even younger, and my mother would take me down to Central YMCA. And we would watch him play because the games were often there in the evening. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with Central Y, and I haven't
No.
been there for many years, but there used to be a track above the gymnasium of the basketball court. And so my mom and I would sit up there and we'd watch the game. And it was just my first, I guess, interest in the game was watching my dad and his teammates and the other teams play. And there were some good players and some not so good players. And so it was really interesting. And there were lots of players better than my dad. He was 6'3" and a half, and he'd range from 230 to 250, different body build than mine. And he was a physical player, not a finesse player. But that was the first kind of thing that I first recollection that I have of basketball. And it's funny because later, not that many years later, I was playing high school at Churchill High. And remember my dad, like I would have been 16, 17, I guess in grade 12. And my dad was still playing at the Y. And I thought, what's he doing? Like he's in his 30s. He's not that good, And I thought I was pretty good, of course, by then. And I would just kind of think, why is he still playing? And it took a few more years before I realized, well, of course he's playing because he loves to play. And I mean, you love to play, I love to play. It's all the things about the game, that the camaraderie, the feel of the ball, the feel of the ball going through the hoop, the teammates, it's just so many things. And so it took a while before I realized how my dad felt. And silly enough, my dad was in his 40s probably when he quit. And I mean, I stopped playing about 5 years ago. My body just said, this is silly. I'm just gonna hurt myself. And so so anyway, that was my start with basketball, was certainly watching it at the Y, and then later, playing at the Y. Back then you couldn't join the YMCA as a kid until you were 10 years old. Like there were no programs for children under 10. And so in the first couple of years, it was just, low organized games and swimming, of course, and stuff. And then once I was 12, then I could play basketball. And of course, then I also started playing at Churchill High in grade 7 in junior high. Churchill was a grade, still is a grade 7 to 12 school. So that was sort of my start.
No, it's interesting to hear you kind of compare your father playing in his 40s and you being like, what's going on here? And then you kind of slipped in there casually. Yeah, I just kind of stopped playing 5 years ago. My body said enough. But I have to ask, just so the people that are listening and watching, how old were you 5 years ago when you stopped playing?
Well, I would have been 69, I guess, at the
Okay.
time.
And the reason why I bring this up is because, most people stop playing the game a long time, well before that. Maybe into their playing into your 50s would be, hey, that's amazing. And so for you, I have a good friend of mine, Graham Bodner, who obviously comes up a lot in this podcast, but I think he wants what you did. He wants to play until he literally can't play anymore. And so it's a kind of a little bit of a tangent, but I have to ask, like, I know you're a phenomenal athlete. I mean, again, you were gifted with that. And even when I remember when I was young and you were in the gym playing, I was like, this old guy is amazing. And again, at the time you were only in your, like, probably late 40s. But the point I think I want to ask you here is what, like, is there anything that you did particularly to be able to keep playing to that point? Because most people say, oh, my knees are too sore, my back's too sore, I can't play, I'm old, I just can't do it. What did you do?
Well, I think a lot of it is genetics. I was just really
Of course.
fortunate to be
Of course.
the kind of body that I have. And but I was again really fortunate that when I did go to the YMCA, it's hard to believe that I was in the gymnastics club, and I did
Oh.
gymnastics. And I think that's something I would really recommend is for athletes, just the body awareness and trying to be flexible, not that I am, but just trying to be flexible and be fit. Actually, one of the members of the gymnastics club that I was with was a fellow by the name of Keith Carter. And he was shorter and more of a gymnastics build. But in the 76 Olympics, when I played, he was there in gymnastics competing for Canada. So it's
Very cool.
kind of a neat thing.
Yeah.
But I also used to do the other thing, I guess I always feel really strongly about, and I think it's changed it a little bit. There's so many parents that want their children to succeed, and they play them in one sport,
Yeah.
and then it's just you get overuse, whether it's volleyball, they get shoulder injuries, whatever I think that's just a mistake. I think there's such a trend, there's a transfer of abilities from one sport to another. And when I think of the players, well, like I think of my boys, they're both excellent athletes. They played racket sports, they played volleyball, they played basketball, they did all kinds of things and were successful. And I think it helped them be successful in university and to reach those things. I think of a guy like Martin Riley, like he didn't just play basketball, he played sports and stuff. And for me, my health, part of it is fitness, part of it's genetics, certainly. But I also ran a lot. So I think that helped me be successful to make teams is because I was fit. And back then, it was a little different than now when you've got all these people doing these training regimes and stuff like that. So that was positive for me. I was pretty fortunate that way.
But I mean, to quit playing in your 60s, I mean, is a feat in itself. So one more question on this. So if you like, what is when you were playing, what is your day-to-day fitness like? Were you a big walker? Are you a big walker? Do you do anything else besides play basketball that just keeps you kind of moving, keeps everything,
I still I walk a lot. Just recently my wife and I joined the Dakota Community Center. We used to go to the ReFit, but with the pandemic that stopped. But I think just try to remain fit and active as best as I can is what I've always done. And you talk about 69. I mean, I wanted to play till I was at least 70 because this St. Andrews, there was a group that used to play at Re Ravenscourt on Sunday mornings. And Kenny Plain actually was part of that group. And he was 14 years older than me. And he was an icon, as we know, and just a fantastic individual and tough as nails on the court, especially if you crossed him and he thought you fouled him and you didn't call it. But a really good guy. But he was there still playing, and he probably was playing. Probably was close to 70, and then I don't know if you would know Bob Hazel,
course,
but he was playing in his 70s, and he coached me. It was St. Andrews, and actually he helped me coach both Sean and Andrew in basketball at junior high. He was that kind of a guy that just loved basketball and went out of his way to coach and help kids become better. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I remember the Hayes, as we used to call him. He helped
Yeah.
coach a few of the my last years there. And I remember one time he came out to the Glenlawn alumni, like he's playing, and he came with the super tiny shorts and he was out there playing. And I could not believe it, being a
Yeah.
when you're young, you know nothing, right? And you only find that out later when you're older. You're
Yeah.
like, oh, I knew nothing. And to see somebody of that age just out there playing. And he, again, there's no, it wasn't like he was a phenomenal athlete, but he was running up and down the court. He was
And
playing basketball, and that was just unbelievable at the time.
Well, and he was a smart player. That was the thing. If you didn't know where he was, he moved to an open spot, got the ball, shot it, and made it, you know, because he was a good shooter. You know, it was funny.
100%, 100%. Okay, let's jump back into your story though. So you get involved in playing the game through watching your father. Those are some of your first memories of watching him play at the downtown Y and some of those games there. When did you start? You said at Churchill you started playing in the 7th grade, and then was it just pretty much from there on in? I know you played a bunch of other sports, but with basketball, I guess the question I have is, when did you start to take it more seriously, where you said, "Hey, I'm pretty good at this. I like it, and I'm actually playing it on a more serious level, for lack of a better term."
Well, as you say, grade seven, I guess 12 years of age, I already knew that I liked the game and it was fun. I enjoyed playing. It was something I was good at. So you feel better about yourself when you're somewhat successful.
Of course, of
And
course.
so in grade 11, and Art Bryant coached me when I was in grade 11. And I was, Paul Bryant's dad, and he was just a really good guy, and I got some playing time and everything. And I think one of the things that happened was at the end of the school year they have awards, and I was very surprised to win a Most Improved Player award, and I think that really kind of got me going. And so then the next year we had a good team, which was made up mostly of grade 11s with John Lavin and guys like Jamie Horn, and they were really good athletes and smart players. And we didn't do as well as we would have liked. We ended up losing in the playoffs to St. John's High School, who had some very good players. So that was kind of disappointing. But so that was my grade 12 year, and I graduated. And I was an okay player, but I wasn't a great player. And back then there were no scholarships and no universities calling you to say, oh, come here, come there, you know. And even if there would have been, I don't know that I would have been recognized at all. But that summer was the summer of the 67 Pan Am Games. And my parents volunteered, and they had me volunteer as well. And oddly enough, Ted Stowes, who's one of my best friends, he was also volunteered the game. So we volunteered in the basketball thing, and we weren't at the actual venue. We were doing things like photocopying stats and stuff like that. So, but we did get to see the games. And I think that was the biggest thing for me, was seeing the Pan Am games, seeing the Canadian team, all these athletes. The US had like Wesley Unseld at the time, just watching them, that was probably the key for me to say to myself, I'd like to do that. I'd like to represent Canada. I want to be as good as I can be, and hopefully get a chance to do that. And I think having games like that, like in 67, then again in 99, makes a huge difference, not just for basketball, but for other sports, for athletes, for them to see this and to think, boy, that's an opportunity. It allows a person to dream and to set goals. And for me, that was the big thing, was in 67 that happening. And I was fortunate. The next year I went on to university, and the year before, which would have been Ross Wedlake's first year, the team was 1-19. I think I know I saw the podcast with him, and there were some good players and stuff. It was just whatever. And so my first year, we had a good team. I didn't play a lot, but I played a little bit. And it just kind of grew from there. I just loved the game and loved to play, and was really fortunate to play with guys like Ross and Ted Stoes and Irv Hanick, and just a variety of players that help make me better. So.
Yeah, no, that's I totally appreciate how a big event like the Pan Am Games completely can inspire especially young people, right? Like to see, maybe I can do that, or I can do something like that. Or sometimes it's just maybe just being wanting to be just more involved in a sport, right? You see how special it is to participate in these events, and I've been at some of these events, and it's just there's a level of like you get the feeling that you get, right? It's
Right.
a sense of something special happening and how powerful it can be. And so I totally understand what you're saying. So then when you're that's in 67, you had graduated, you had mentioned, hey, there's no scholarships, nothing like that. You already knew that you were going to the University of Manitoba as a student at the time?
Correct. Yeah,
Okay.
I went I was because of my experience in the YMCA, and I'd worked part-time there and had access to the gym. And actually, when I was in grade 12, I opened the gym for John Kutnikoff, who was the coach at Simon Fraser at the time. And there were
Okay.
about I'm going to say 15 to 20 players that it was a Saturday morning. And I came in, opened the gym, and here were these guys like Ross Wedlick and Ted Stoes and
Yeah.
Jaime Fox and all these and a bunch of other players that John Kutnikoff was trying to recruit to go to Simon Fraser.
Okay.
So I'm sitting in the gym watching these guys, and I'm saying to myself, like, where do I fit into this? Like, am I as good as them? And being a kid, and you think you know it all. Of course, you think, yeah, I could play with these guys. Why aren't I out there on the floor? But of course, you're not, And so that was kind of an interesting experience. But my whole thing through the YMCA, which was a fantastic experience for me, that made me want to go into the University of Manitoba physical education program. Because at the time, I thought, I'd like to go back and work at the YMCA, But of course, once I started going through phys ed at University of Manitoba, I realized, you know what? If you're a teacher, you get paid a whole lot more money than you do at the YMCA. And so that was sort of the start. But in 1969, there was a development camp. Like basketball in Canada still was not nearly as strong as it is today. And so in 1969, there was a development camp where there were 24 people, 24 men, 24 women that were invited to University of Manitoba to try out. And they were going to select people to go to Hamilton, to McMaster University for 2 weeks and train for 2 weeks with Canadians across, Canada under the age of 20 or 21, whatever it was at that time. And I had a really good summer job as a recreation director at this community, and I had to make a choice, and because I had this goal, I thought, well, I want to go to Hamilton, but I've got to make this team, and I might not make it, or it might not be selected, I should say. So I quit the recreation job and tried out, and actually was selected to go to Hamilton along with Ross Wedlick and Ted Stoes and Angus Burr. And there were then all kinds of people from across Canada. But one day I was in an elevator. It was the same summer, and I was going to an appointment, and this gentleman said to me, introduced himself, and he was on the board of the recreation center that I quit the job. And he explained to me, he said, I know you want to do this, he said, but and I'm just paraphrasing what he said, but I was involved with the Pan Am Games in 67, and I think you're making a big mistake. You're not going to make a big splash in basketball. You're not going to make a national team. I've
No
seen your
way.
caliber of players. And I just stood there and listened to him. I mean, I was respectful because he was a an elder, and I thought, you don't know me. You don't know what I can do. And it put a little chip on my shoulder, which probably wasn't a bad thing to have, but it really upset me that he had this preconceived notion about who I was and how good I could be. Anyway, ended up going to the Hamilton camp for 2 weeks, and the national team was training there at that time with Peter Mullins, and so there would have been, I'm guessing, I don't know, 30, 40 males that were at this 2 week camp. And so the national team that was tr training there, they selected a dozen people. Ted and Ross and Angus and I were part of the 12 to play against an exhibition game against the national team. So that was a pretty neat experience for all of us. Because we were pretty young still back then, and there were some pretty good players, obviously, on the national team. And then when the camp, the development camp ended in 69, Peter Mullins asked me to stay and train with the national team. So that was the first opportunity I had with the national team. And I was the kid, and there were men there, and guys that could play, and I was over my head, but it was a good experience nonetheless. And then the following year in 1970, there was a national team camp at University of Manitoba, and there were a bunch of us there: Ted Ross, Angus, Terry Ball, who was a really, really good player, and so we had this trial camp again with Peter Mullins. And then the following year was the 71 Pan Am Games in Kelly, Columbia. And so the national camp was in BC because Peter Mullins was the UBC coach and the national team coach. So Ted Stoes made that Kelly, Columbia Pan Am team. I was an alternate, so I didn't get to go or anything. And that was a bit disheartening at that point. But I realized, well, I have to get better. So anyway, but just my years at University of Manitoba playing for the Bisons, I just have to say, my first year was with Darwin Simoniak, who was had just gotten out of university himself. And I know Ross had mentioned that the one win that they had was against Darwin's team. But Darwin Simoniak only coached 1 year at University of Manitoba, and he was just a classy guy, you know, and knew basketball. And he was a good coach, and his assistant coach was Freddie Ingelsson, who was a phenomenal basketball player for Manitoba. And Freddie and Darwin did a really good job with that team, and we did very well. But then the following year, Darwin left for Western University, and was there for many years, and passed away a couple of years ago, unfortunately. But so Jack Lewis came in, and Jack coached for 4 years, I guess, and our team did very well. And he recruited a couple of Americans. Cliff Cornelius and John Gerben came up. Cliff was just for 1 year. He came out of Nebraska. He played 4 years down there, and John came from Minneapolis, and he stayed and played here for many years, both university and then also senior men's before going back to Minneapolis. Yeah, Jack did a really good job. And in 1971, we were in the national final and lost to Acadia. Very few losses that year, but lost to Acadia in the final at what was then the Golden Boy, the Westman Classic, now it's called. But and then lost to them. Then they played a 1-3-1 zone that
Couldn't figure
we
out.
couldn't do anything with it. It was too bad because I. It's funny, you know, there's losses like that. And then the next year, in my last year of university, we lost to Saskatchewan in a best of three. We won the first game here at home, lost the second, and then lost the third, and should have won it. And it's the losses that you remember. That's the worst memories, unfortunately, but those are the ones you remember, it seems like. So anyway,
No,
yeah.
absolutely. So then, so many questions from this. So, when you were at University of Manitoba in your first couple of years, you were, the young guy on the team, but by the end of your career, you were kind of one of the, well, you were a captain and kind of a leader. So how much of it, obviously, you mentioned the national team experiences, being able to come to those camps and stuff like that. But you really developed in those years from a player who, hey, I don't play that much, to someone who's playing a lot. And then for pretty much, right after you're done playing, you kind of transfer into, getting opportunities with the national team. And so it was pretty much an ascension from the high school where you're like, yeah, I was okay, pretty good, to like being, an all-Canadian, a captain, an Olymp like essentially an Olympian. So it's like this trajectory. But in that time, you must have had some mentors, some people that really helped guide you. And I know you brought some of them up, but maybe some of those lessons you learned from being somebody in high school, I don't really know as much, I'm kind of just here, I'm learning, I'm trying to absorb as much information as possible to being the person that, is an Olympian. You learn a lot of lessons that kind of help guide you. So maybe, who were some of those people who were really critical in shaping you through that process? And maybe some of the lessons that you then passed on to people when you were now mentoring people.
Well, I think I was very fortunate for sure, because the people that I played with at the University of Manitoba, mentioned Cliff Cornelius, Ted Stoes, Ross Wedlake, John Lavin, Angus Burr, Irv Hanick, the older guys when I first got there, Eric Bartz. Because you would practice, and you got better in practice all the time. It just was Terry Ball. I can't forget Terry. Irv Hanick, I think maybe mentioned. These were guys who were really not just good basketball players, but they were quality individuals, and that made a huge difference, I think, as well, because it helped you grow not just athletically but as a person. And Jack Lewis, I mentioned. I mean, he was a guy who. He was so supportive to individuals, not just the team, but other people in the physical education faculty. The things that the stories that I've heard from my friends, the stuff that I didn't realize that he had done for them to help them to be successful, to financially be able to get through university, stuff like that. He actually Jack had when they were building the Commerce Building at the University of Manitoba. So that's what, back in 69, I guess 70, in that area era. He got Ross Wedlake, myself, Angus Burr, and Richard Gooch jobs on construction there. So I remember we were making $3.20 an hour, which I know doesn't sound like much, but back then that was huge money, with everything going on. But we would finish working, and then we would go to the gym. And somehow, I can't remember how, but somehow we had a key to get in the gym. I don't know what that was about, but so we would go into Bison East, and that was a fantastic building to play basketball in. And we would, after working from 8 to 3 o'clock or whatever it was, then we'd spend another hour, hour and a half, 2 hours shooting hoops and playing one on one or two on two, and those were the things, I think, that helped us become better players, like all of us, and certainly for me, playing against better players. I remember one time playing one on one with Terry Ball, and I don't know how much you know about Terry Ball, but Terry Ball could score like nobody. Left-handed, quick as can be, he had this triple move that he used, and I was trying to play defense, and he would just kick the heck out of you, like, there's no way I could beat him, but it made me a better player. And I think that was important. I mean, guys like Bob Hazel, when I finished university and played with St. Andrews, he certainly was a big help in my game. Peter Mullins at UBC. But then when Jack Donahue came on the scene, and that was the first year that I really made the team, he was a really interesting coach, and he did wonders for basketball in Canada. That's for sure,
Big time, big time. He coach, you hear the name is well renowned. People who don't know who he is know the name even. You know what I mean? Like young people, like, oh, I've heard that name before. But what so your first year was his first year when you first made the team? Was that his first year?
I guess just to go back to like I feel like I was really fortunate, and I was mentored well because of people I played with, people that coached me, quality individuals. Unfortunately, I don't know that I mentored very well. And when I was in my last year, I feel really badly that I didn't think that I did the job that was necessary for us to go on. And because we had some really good players like Rick Watts, Darryl Rumsey, Greg Gillies, Ralph Schoenfeld, who played for the Bombers, and he played for us for the Bisons, Gordy Puttert, Angus, of course. Like we had, John Gerber, we had really good players, And it was disappointing that we didn't go on. And I, as I say, you remember the losses more than anything, and that was unfortunate.
No, 100%. I think some of those guys later on, that's obviously went on to have
Great careers.
steal the deal and have great careers. But I something I gotta ask you, you mentioned Roth's podcast, so you listened to it, but the topic came up in a conversation that he and I had, and I was around salt tablets and post and pregame recovery and things of that nature. What do you remember about that during your time?
Well, yeah, back then, lots of teams, they said, you don't drink water, you shouldn't be drinking water. It's just going to make you feel badly when you're playing, when you're running and whatever. And it's so different than the whole concept of hydrating now. And yeah, the tablets, there were these other ones, sort of like not a sugar pill, but that you would take to try to give you energy, I guess, or I don't know. It was just, but back then there wasn't all that much weight training or those that kind of any training that you did on your own. And it was somewhat, and back then, as John Lavin would say, like they would say, well, no, you shouldn't do weights because that's going to ruin your shot. You're going to get muscle bound or whatever. Well, there was no chance of me getting muscle bound, but I maybe could have gotten stronger. But no, it's interesting how I think the things have changed considerably.
A lot, a lot. I mean, even when I, like, again, I graduated in 2000, and I remember people still kind of saying those things about working out. Like, it was still, like, it was still in the ether. People were doing it, but people would say, oh, it affects my shot. And it's interesting because obviously, if you get like be a bodybuilder size, yeah, you're going to probably shoot differently. But the thing that I would remember, and I said, oh, it must be true, is because if you go right from the gym and you pump a bunch of weight and you're not trained yet, like, you're not like a trained person, and you try to shoot the ball, you're so fatigued, you can't shoot. And so people are like,
Exactly.
yeah, it's
No, it
true. See,
things have changed fortunately
I.
to for the better.
No, 100%. So I wanted to continue down the path of the national team because obviously you said you finally made the team. We know that you were in Montreal. Tell me about how you actually got onto the team. Was it just, hey, they're having tryouts all the time and you're always part of them and you just happen to make the team? Do you remember that year and the transition that was made?
Well, I guess what happened was, well, in 72, our Bison team lost to Saskatchewan, as I said. So we didn't advance, which was really disappointing. Now, St. Andrews and Ross and Ted and a lot of Bison guys, they were playing in the national championships in Vancouver. So I couldn't play with them because I was a university player. I wasn't eligible. But they invited me to go to Vancouver with them because after the Nationals, they were going to go to Cuba to play in Cuba. They had a five-game series down in Cuba against the Cuban national team and their Cuban junior national team. So I went to Vancouver and watched St. Andrews, and they won the national championship. And they had a really good team with Ross and Ted and Irv Hanick, Frank Evans, who was coach of U of W at the time, was playing, and Freddie Ingelsson was coaching them. There's a fellow by the name of Jerome Barney, who was an American, black guy, big guy, really good post. And they had other players that were good as well. Dave Mills, Tim Ruppel, Jaime Foxx was on that team. Anyway, I went and watched them play. They won the national championship, and then the team went to Cuba. So I went to Cuba because Ray McCall couldn't go because he was with some stuff going on with university and stuff. And so that was really a great experience for me because we played against the Cuban national team. And I started, even though I wasn't part of the team really. And we had a we were really good. And Cuba was a very good team. They'd done really well, and we gave them a pretty good run for their money. We beat their junior team, national junior team. So that was a great experience. And there was a fellow from Basketball Canada at the time that was on the trip with St. Andrews, one of those little perks that the directors get, so he came to Cuba with us. And when we came back home, they had this plan to send five players from Canada to Europe and have them experience playing in Europe. And because this fellow was on this trip and he saw me play, and I ended up being invited along with Ted Stoes to go to Europe. The other three players were Terry McKay from UBC, and they'd won the national championship, Alex Braden, another from UBC, and then Billy Robinson, who played for many years for the national team, and he was from Simon Fraser. So the five of us went over to Europe, and a fellow by the name of Jim McGregor, he was their contact, and he was an agent kind of guy. And he ran a team over there called the Gillette All-Stars. And it was made up of all American players who'd graduated from university and weren't making the NBA at that time. So he would have this traveling team called the Gillette All-Stars, and they would play in Italy and France and Sweden and Yugoslavia, all over the place. And what his goal was for the teams, these Division I teams that were being played in all these countries, to see these American players, and then he would get them jobs. So they
Got
would
it.
play in
Yes, of
Spain
course.
or Italy or France, and then he would get a cut, of course, because he was the agent. And
Course.
so that was what he did. So the five of us played with a few Americans, and we traveled and played for 4 or 5 weeks, I guess, over there. So that was kind of my first experience at that level. And to be honest with you, I mean, back then, like, it was phenomenal. Like Division One in Italy and in Spain was very, very good basketball. And the difference between that and the NBA, I mean, now there's all kinds of European players playing in the
Course.
NBA. And I think there probably were lots that could have back then, but maybe they've just progressed so much. I don't know. So at the end of that 6 weeks, we came back home, and there had been a camp here in well, across the in all the provinces. There were camps that Jack Donahue ran to select players to go to a final camp. And Ted and I had missed it because we were in Europe. And so Ross and Angus were selected, and because we were away and we were doing this thing with Canada Basketball, we were also allowed to go or selected to go. So we
Got
went to
it.
Courtney, BC, and that was Jack Donahue's first camp with, and I'm guessing there were maybe 50 of us there. And the idea was there were going to be two national teams, an A and a B team. And the A team would go to Europe and travel, excuse me, and play some tournaments and stuff. And then play in a pre-Olympic tournament to qualify for Munich. That would be a pre-Olympic trial, and three or four teams were going to go on to Munich. Anyway, the B team would go to China and play in China. So there were about 50 of us there in Courtney, BC. We stayed in this school, and you got these beds in these school rooms, these classrooms. And there's this gym, which was a pretty nice gym. It was a hardwood floor, of course, and everything. But we had 3-a-days. And 3-a-days
Whoa.
are tough. And again, I go back to that. That had to help me because I was always pretty fit. I was a runner. I used to run cross country and track and stuff. And so you talk about 3-a-days, but the reality is, it's not just practice starts at 9. Goes to 10:30. What you got to be out there by at least 8:45, warming up, or because you're gonna die. Everybody else is gonna be warm, so you're putting in lots of hours in those 3-a-days, and so after 2 weeks, there was the selection, and it was. I remember it was pretty worrisome because I'm with my good friends Ross and Ted and Angus, and you want everybody. You're hoping you're gonna make the team, and so Ross and Ted and I made the 70. The A team, and Angus went to China with the B team, and that was a fun experience, I'll tell you. We went over and we played in Europe, and played on in Italy, and then played in Augsburg and against these other national teams. And unfortunately, again, we didn't qualify for Munich, which was too bad. But that was my first experience, and then I was finished university, and so was Ted. Had a chance for a job in Winnipeg teaching, but Ted and I had decided that we were going to stay and play for the Gillette All-Stars.
Oh,
So
no way.
we traveled, played for this so-called professional traveling team from September to December, and played in all you know played all over Europe,
Yeah.
you know, and just had a really good experience with it. Actually, I had a chance to play Division Two in Nice in France. I was offered a contract there, but by this time I was, you know, it was December. I'd been away for almost, you know, three quarters of the year. I was ready to go home. So went home, and that ended that. And then there were tryouts in 73, and that was in Winnipeg, actually. And that was for the World Student Games. And you know, you talk about World Championships, which I never got a chance to play in. That was in 74, unfortunately. But when you play in a multi-sport game, like a World University Games or Pan Am Games or Canada Games even, or you know, or the Olympics, it's such a different experience playing and meeting all these other athletes from all these other sports. So it was you know, it was really phenomenal. So anyway, in 73, Rick Watts and I made the team, and Martin Riley was just out of high school, so he made the national team, but he couldn't play in the university games because he wasn't a university student. So when we played in Moscow, he and a couple of other players had to wait for us, and then we traveled and played some more. But we played before that. We played in Poland and England and Czechoslovakia, and that was a phenomenal experience. I'll tell you a story here. I'm probably talking too much.
No, this is it. Like this, let's go. I'm this is the what you're doing is perfect. Let's keep going. I
So
love it.
Martin and Rick Watts and I were playing, you know, and we're playing in Czechoslovakia, and there's one day it's a shoot around, and so you know you got. And so we all change into our gear, you know, we're in our shorts and our tops, our practice tops, and we're shooting around. We got half the gym. The other half of the gym is the United States team, the Americans.
Yeah.
And they got their runners on, their sneakers, but they're in their blue jeans and their, you know, whatever t-shirt or whatever, and they're at the other end. So we're running some plays and shooting the ball and stuff, and I have to tell you, this American team was maybe the best team that I've ever played against. And I played against lots of NBA players, you know, like phenomenal players. But we're looking at the other end, what the heck are they doing down there? And they're all kind of standing around and couldn't figure out what they were doing. So on this team is David Thompson. And I'm not sure if you know, like David Thompson was the first Michael Jordan. Like he could dunk. I think he lost to Michael Jordan in the dunk contest, the very first dunk contest. But he could do, he was phenomenal. And he was a little shorter than I was, but could he leap? He was just unbelievable. So we look at the other end, and here's these guys, and here's David Thompson, and he's got the ball, and he's running up to the hoop, and he's got the ball tucked in his arm like this, and he's going up, and he's going to try to punch it in to dunk the ball. Like you know, you got to get your
You
shoulders
gotta
up
be up.
above, you got to get your shoulders above the rim to do that. And this guy's 6'4", you know. Anyway, it was unbelievable watching him do that. But on that team was a number of players from that Indiana team that Bobby Knight coached that went undefeated, Quinn Buckner, Scott May, and a fellow by the name of Maurice Lucas. I don't know if you would know that name.
Of
Like
course, yeah, of course.
he was one of the toughest guys. You know, and he played, all these guys played in the NBA. There was Marvin Barnes, who was a wee bit of a head case,
But talented player.
scary guy, that's for sure, absolutely. And but anyway, so we played in the university games in Moscow. Rick unfortunately hurt his knee. First game we play, I was on the bench, but I was the first sub in, and I was pumped. And you know, you just get in, you go up, get a rebound, come down, landed on a guy's foot, and dislocated the ball of my foot. Like you know, the ball joint of my foot just totally dislocated, and
No way.
that was a problem. And I, you know, for a year it was, you know, it just takes so long for those kinds of injuries
Yeah.
to And I think that's my excuse for not making the 74 team either.
Valid excuse. That's a valid reason.
Yeah.
Valid
But
reason.
So then in 75 was the Pan Am team, and we played in Mexico, and we didn't play very well there, and it was disappointing. Let me go back to 72. That year, I guess Canada already knew they were going to host the 76 Olympics.
Yeah.
And so that was pretty exciting. So you knew you were going to be in it. You didn't have to qualify or anything. Usually you have to qualify for the Olympics, but as the host team, host country, you didn't have to. But for Montreal, like, I remember thinking, geez, I want to play in the Olympics, but I want to play somewhere else. You know, I don't want to play my home country.
Yes.
I'd like to go somewhere,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
But meanwhile, in 73, I was in Moscow. In 75, I was in Mexico City. And I always call it the three M's, you know. And then Montreal in 76. And boy, I was so wrong about playing at home. Like, one of the most amazing feelings as the host country at the opening ceremonies, everybody, like, the Olympic Village was, I don't know, about a mile and a half from the Olympic Stadium. And so all the countries line up outside in their wardrobe, you know, and they're all dressed in their country colors and everything. So each team enters the stadium, and the Olympic Stadium is open at the top. Mm-hmm. So you can hear the announcer, you know, and they're saying from Antigua, you know, from Brazil, you know, and the crowd's cheering and everything. And being the host country, I still get emotional.
Of course.
We're the last country to come in. So we come in, and, you know, everybody stands up. It was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Sorry. Anyway, it was such a good experience. It was so neat to be representing Canada.
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
Yeah. Understatement. No, you're good. I mean, I hope you can
edit that out.
Yeah. No, you know what?
It was a phenomenal experience. And just to represent Canada all those years and wear the maple leaf, listen to the national anthem, It was a dream come true, you know.
Yeah.
It was just fantastic.
Yeah.
Again, you remember the losses more than the wins. We were in a pool that the top two teams, there's two pools, top two teams advance,
mm-hmm.
and we lost to Russia. We'd only beaten them once the year before in 75 in Maple Leaf Gardens. We played them, and that was the only time in my tenure that we ever beat Russia. So we finished second in our pool, which was what our goal was, to get into the next. So all we had to do was win one more game. Our goal from 72 on was to win a medal.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, we played, because we finished second, we would play the Americans first. And we played the Americans about 2-3 weeks before in Plattsburgh, in New York State, and gave them a pretty good game. I think we lost by 12. But Ken McKenzie was our center, big 6'10", tough guy. He played at Montana State. And in the game, he landed and tore his knee up. So he wasn't able to play in the Olympics, which was really unfortunate, because he was a tough guy, big rebounder, and he could score, left-handed guy. So that was too bad. So when we played the Americans in the semifinal, they had guys like Phil Ford, Mitch Kupchak, Ernie Grunfeld. Kupchak and Grunfeld, they went on to be general managers for NBA teams.
And
well, first of all, they played in NBA and stuff. So they had lots of really, really good players, and they beat us pretty handily. So, I mean, some of us, I think, if not most of us, were hoping that Russia would beat Yugoslavia in the other semifinal, because we thought we matched up not too badly against Yugoslavia, whereas Russia was, they were pretty tough.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, Yugoslavia beat Russia, so then we had to play in the bronze medal game against Russia. And again, you know, and unfortunately we lost, finished fourth, which is, I guess, okay, but it's not a medal. And so it was disappointing. And I remember a few of us after the game, they have drug testing, eh? So you have to go and
Yeah.
there were about four of us, and so we're in there for a while, you know, because some of us are a little more, takes a little longer. Anyway, so by the time we get out of there, there's I guess it was Phil Tallstrup, who was a really, really good player, Billy Robinson, great player, and myself, and there maybe was, I can't remember, there was maybe somebody else, but I remember the three of us and somebody else were walking out, and the game was in Montreal Forum at the time, so we're walking down, you know, in the bottom main floor, and you got to go upstairs to go outside. So this guy's coming in, and you can't see him. All you can see is from his, you know, shoulders down. Like, how big is this guy coming in? And this guy walks in. It's a big black guy, and it's Wilt Chamberlain.
Oh, no
And
way.
so Wilt Chamberlain was my hero, my idol for, you know, as a
Yeah.
kid, always. Didn't get many NBA games on TV back then, but of course,
Yeah.
here's this guy who scored 100 points, the
Yeah,
only
of
guy ever
course.
to score that in the NBA. So he walks in, and we're just like, I'm anyway, my eyes are huge. And he walks in, and he recognizes Billy Robinson. He says, oh, hey, you guys, Canadian team, you know, tough one, you know, congratulations. Shakes our hands, you know. So, like, I don't have very big hands, but,
Yeah.
you know, I shake his hand, and his hand is huge.
Yeah.
I tell this story, like, you know, Norm Fermel.
Of course, yeah.
He's 7'1", and he's got big hands. Well, I always say, well, Norm's hands were dainty compared to Wilt Chamberlain's hands. Like, they're just huge hands, you know. So, a little bittersweet, you know, you meet your
Yeah.
idol the day you lose the bronze medal game. But
Yeah.
anyway, it was
Wow.
kind of neat,
So
yeah.
was he just there watching the game?
Yeah, he'd come to watch the final, you
Okay.
know, and he'd watch the other one. Like, there was time between the bronze medal game and the other, so he just had come to watch the Olympics. And
Okay.
I'm sure he had enough money to buy a ticket. And
I was gonna say, yeah. That's so cool. That's such a yeah, that's wild. I've heard that from different people who've shaken NBA players' hands generally, but you hear about Dr. J, for example, same thing, just massive hands, just like way too big, even for the person large, but their hands are even bigger, you know, and so
And
that's a
he's another hero of mine, Dr. J. I mean, you know, back then on TV, like, he was phenomenal. So
yeah.
when Jack Donahue retired in Ottawa, I was really fortunate. Again, the University of Manitoba sent me to Jack's retirement, and Julius Irving was the guest
No
speaker.
way.
Yeah,
Cool.
so got to meet Julius Irving there. And then in 2007, I think it was, when the 76 team was inducted into the Canada Basketball Hall of Fame, the guest speaker at that was Dominique Wilkins.
No way.
You
That's
know,
cool.
another phenomenal dunker, and so
Yeah.
got to meet Dominic, got a picture with him, and yeah, pretty neat. So yeah.
Yeah. No, this is, I mean, just, yeah, unbelievable. I have to ask you this because, you know, we started off the podcast and you were, you know, you said, hey, I stopped playing 5 years ago. And we've mentioned a few times you're, you know, you're a good athlete, you're a runner and jumper. When was the last time you dunked a basketball? I
Well,
gotta.
actually, a couple of weeks ago, I did. Richard Gooch, his granddaughter's at Niagara Place, and he was running a grade 2, 3, 4 girls basketball camp. And Greg Daniels and I were helping him out with this. And Katie Gooch, his daughter, the mother of Olivia. So we lower the rim state feet, so I could dunk then, you know. But other than that, I can't recall. It's too long.
It's been a while.
Oh, yeah.
Because I remember way back when, I think it was Clyde Drexler came into Winnipeg. It was something, and he's, you know, was 50 something, and he went up and was at a rec center and just dunk the basketball, and
Yeah.
we're like, you know, and it's
Oh, boy.
a lot. Yeah, like you said at the start, I said, what do you do? You're saying, you said a lot of it's genetic, Darcy.
Yeah.
And this is a true statement for sure. But you know, we're getting close to the end here. You've told us so many crazy stories and just interesting stories, and I have to ask you, just kind of as we transition out of here, you obviously were offered that opportunity to play pro, and I know back then it was a little bit different. But you did go on to play senior men's for a long time. Can you just tell us a little bit about, like, I mean, most people don't know, and I talked about this with Roth and a few other people as well from your era. They don't understand, like, senior men's model and the national championship, and the talent level of the people that were playing essentially was like a pro level experience, for lack of a better term, or a semi-pro level experience as far as the talent, right? So can you just explain kind of your experience and kind of maybe your story through senior men's and what it meant to
Sure.
you? Yeah.
Well, I guess back then, when you graduate from university, unless you're going to play in the beer leagues, there wasn't really many opportunities. So in 73, for me, I guess 77, I played with St. Andrews, and we played and we played in national championships. And in 75, we won here in Manitoba. That was my first national championships. In 76, we won in Victoria. And then in 77, it was going to be here again. And the very first game we're playing against Newfoundland. And Ted Stoes is going in for a layup. Why I would rebound, I mean, I don't know, because he's not going to miss it. So both Ross Wedlick and I go into rebound, and Ross catches me with his elbow and breaks my
Oh.
jaw, and so I couldn't play the rest of that tournament, which was too bad. I don't know if we would have won or not, but we had a chance to three-peat. And so for athletes now, after university, there isn't a whole lot unless they're really good, but there are players from Bisons and from Westmen that are going to play in Europe in different countries and continue their careers there. So there is a bit of an opportunity. But the last year of the senior nationals was in 86. And here in Manitoba, I mean, we won in, well, St. Andrews won in 72, we won in 75 and 76. Certainly felt we should have won the other years as well, because we were good enough, we thought, but that's another story. And then I think in 78 or 79, Nicolet won, and they won 4 years, or
Yeah.
3 or 4 years in a row. So basketball in Manitoba was really good. Like in 76, St. Andrews won the senior men's, and University of Manitoba Bisons won the college championship. So, I mean, that kind of gives you an idea. And the toughest games probably both of us had were against each other when we had exhibit. And I think we played four times, and we each won two of the matches. So, it was really good. And yeah, the level, like, I think basketball in Manitoba has done a great job with Winnipeg Minor Basketball League and all the basketball teams that are available for people to play. And I know when I go and walk at Dakota and on the track upstairs, and there's games going on down below at different levels, and it's nice to see so many people active and still taking part at different levels. So
Different era for sure, different opportunities nonetheless. So I want to kind of wrap with this question. I mean, you've shared so many unbelievable stories, and again, just giving us some perspective of kind of the journey you've went through. I'd like to finish with asking a question around a piece of advice. And so what I'll kind of frame it this way. You got to see Dominique speak and Dr. J speak and all these people. I'm sure there's plenty of other people. And now you're now the person sitting in front of maybe some younger kids who would love to play for the national team, who would love to, continue to play until they're, 69 years old and just have this long career. And you want to leave them with a piece of advice because, you could talk for an hour. They're not going to remember all that. But there's one thing that you do want them to remember and walk away from, like, oh yeah, I remember, Bob said that one thing that really resonated, that really stuck with me. What piece of advice would you want them to walk out of that room with?
Well, as I said earlier, I think for me, the Pan Am Games in 67 was the start of my belief that maybe there was something further, an opportunity for me. So I think you have to have that imagination, the dare to dream. You have to have that ambition that you need to really want it to be better. And certainly the skills, the practice, the work ethic, that commitment, the follow through, those are just so important. But you're not successful on your own. You need support, and the support, whether it was from coaches, teammates, family, trainers, friends, you know, that believe in you and that are supportive of you. I mean, that's very, very important too. The other two pieces that you don't really have a say in, one is genetics.
Yeah.
And the other is good luck. I firmly believe that I was really fortunate for the way things worked out for me. I was fortunate to have the teammates that I had, the coaches that I had. My teammates certainly made me better. I still have friendships with many of those teammates. I think back personally about, you know, in 75 and 76 in particular. I mean, I mentioned Rick Watts and Ted Stoes a number of times. Those are two really, really good players that played the same position that I played. And why I was able to make the national team and not them, because lots of people would say they were better players than me, and I couldn't argue with it. They were better shooters than me, that's for sure. And so I was lucky that Jack Donahue, for whatever reason, chose me instead of Rick or Ted, and they were unfortunate in that. So a lot of it has to do with luck, and I've been pretty lucky in life all told, Darcy. Yeah. So I can't complain whatsoever, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your time, Bob. It's been wonderful just to hear the story. You know, like I kind of open up the podcast with this. You know, in the community, we know people. Hey, I know Bob Town. Hey, I know his sons. Hey, I know he was a good basketball player. I know he played there, but we don't often hear like how it felt and what you remember. And so this is the important part about this is giving people a chance to peer into what it is you experienced and how you experienced it. Yeah. So I appreciate you taking the time to be so open and share just the journey of basketball. So thank you.
Well, thank you. You may want to cut this out of the thing, but like I remember in grade 12, you were in grade 11 at Glenlawn, and you were a good player, and I know became an even better player. So Sean, my oldest son, was playing for Glenlawn at the time, and they were going to play Maples in the provincials, and unfortunately, you were unable to play that game.
I remember that. Yeah.
And I still firmly believe that if you had been able to play that game, Glenlawn would have knocked off Maples, and you guys would have gone further on into provincial. So that was unfortunate, Darcy. I know you've done very well with your career too, and basketball I think has been pretty good to you too. So that's good to see. I'm really happy for you. So
yeah, anyway, I appreciate
keep up the good work.
No, thank you so much. You have a sharp memory. That's a good, you have a sharp memory.
So far,
yeah. Well, you know, like I definitely couldn't tell half the stories the way you could. So I appreciate the kind words so much. And really it is, I'm so grateful just to be able to sit and be in the position I'm in right now, just listening to you share your story and be part of the process. So I really do thank you for being part of this.
Thanks, Darcy. I appreciate being invited.
Awesome. Okay. Take care, Bob.
You too.
All right.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Please like, subscribe, follow, and share this series, and reach out to us with your comments on the show. Thanks again for joining us.